Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the fifth season of Enter the Muse. Let me tell you something, brothers and sisters. This podcast was this close to being canceled. Why is that, you ask? Well, every episode, there's some controversial shit happening and controversial shit that's said. But you wouldn't know because you watch the show. Uh-oh, I don't think so. Anyway, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Yes, you'll never take me down. This podcast is forever. Fifth season, it's going to be bigger and better. I know the last two seasons, I've just been doing Joburg guests since I moved to Joburg. But I have hundreds and hundreds of fans around the world. So I thought, how about I be an inclusive bastard and include everyone? Yes, guys. Enter the Muse is back to being international. In fact, today I have an international guest. He's one of the reasons why I decided to come back to do this podcast. This man has written a book about creativity, and he's a very creative individual. Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to see a podcast between me and Rich Kirkpatrick. Enjoy. What's up, Rich? How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and it's so good to talk to you from the other side of the planet.
Yes, San Francisco. How's that?
It's good. So I'm in my workshop right now trying to stay warm.
But it's winter there. It's quite cold, eh?
But it's not bad. Not bad.
All right. Over here, it's been crazy. It's supposed to be sunny all day, and it's just been raining the whole day. In fact, it's been crazy. My neighbors were like robbed earlier. There were gunshots. There was no lights. It was wild. But we are here. We are here.
That sounds like my old neighborhood in East San Jose.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I feel like all of these places, no matter where you are, there's crime, there's obstacles, I guess that's what makes things relatable, especially for artists and creators. I feel like in order to be a creative or an artistic person, you should have gone through like some kind of trauma, some kind of ordeals or something just to like get you to the point of, I'm not going to go to therapy to talk about it. I'm going to actually put it out there on a canvas or in poetry or in music or in film. What's your outlook on that?
I think that's most likely true, because sometimes it's our traumas that drive us. But I don't think creativity is trauma. I think it's, like you said, it's a response to it. We want to heal. We want to thrive as people. And so I look at it this way. Creativity is what humans do when we thrive. So our goal to get out of whatever it is to that other side is really because you see something more and you want to go after it. And that drive, which all of us who are creatives know what that feels like. You just want to see something happen or something more for yourself or for someone else. And so, yeah, I agree with that. I think that's part of it. But I don't think that's where we're supposed to stay.
Yeah.
I think if we want to keep creating all our lives, you know, we have to kind of thrive in life and find a way to, you know, pull ourselves out of whatever it is. And we need each other to do that.
So when you mentioned it's come from like people who, a society that thrives, do you think like back in the Stone Ages, even though we do see like artwork from their era and like stone drawings and all of those things, but I'm sure it, as you said, it's a society where we thrive. So I'm sure like back then people were not creating as much because they had other stuff to worry about. They need to like not be eaten by a tiger or hunted by a mountain lion. So, but like, I agree with you when you say it's come from when we are thriving. But I feel like when you are, when stuff is going well, like you try to distract yourself from that, with all those things, and try and move away from your creative journey and your creative destiny. I don't know, what's your perspective on this?
Well, when I study what scientists say, you just describe what scientists explain the tension of creativity is,
Oh, yeah.
because you want to do something new, and so you get to a point where you have to create something because you got to make it, you got to eat, or whatever it is you got to do. But then there's the other side where maybe, it's a routine and you get too bored in your brain, so you get in a rut, and so we want familiar. In other words, our brain wants to be familiar with something. But then we get to a point where we get bored with that. And that's kind of its own kind of trauma. So it may not be the tiger getting you, but it's something that kind of, wow, So if you can get bored, that's a privilege in life and human history. And so when people have war, the terrible thing about war, why war is the worst thing possible, besides, that it harms people, of course, because creativity is about people, right? So when you do war, first of all, you break people's creativity, you destroy it. You take their culture, you take whatever it is away, and that's evil. That's just terrible. But then you also stop people who were creating, they spend energy now destroying. So you've taken them out away from creating. You've taken their guitar away and you put a rifle in their arm or something, and so what they would have been doing, they're not doing anymore. And then the third thing that makes it terrible is that you people no longer have the vision to create. They're just trying to survive. And so human history, the creative people, when someone in power wants to, take over, they want to shut them up, because
Yeah.
we're the ones who always ask, well, there's more out there, right? And we want honesty, and we want, we don't want it just colored, the pain to disappear. We want to make it have meaning. And so anyway, all that to say is what you're describing, I think that's we know that as creative people, but scientists are kind of describing this to me when I was researching the book, and it kind of blew me away.
Yeah. So, do you think that people, everyone is a creative in a way, because you said if you take a person, take away their guitar and give them a rifle, they are in tune, they are therefore like moving away from their artistic ability or their potential to create. But do you think everyone has that potential to create within them?
I personally believe it, and the scientists say our brains are uniquely wired. They study all the different animals, of course, and how we get input from our ears and eyes to the back of the head, just how the brain is designed. We are wired as human beings to create and to mash together things in our head in ways that other creatures don't do it. They do some a little bit, and but they don't do it quite the way that we do, because we have this longing for meaning, and humanity has this desire for that. And so what the scientists have discovered, those our brains really are wired for it. Now, societies sometimes will like the person more who's not the dreamer, who will follow rules, or because it serves
It's easier to for compliance is easy, because
yeah
but like the
and
truest artists like ask question pose questions in their art, and
yes
that's what they do not like.
they don't like the questions. And the questions is what we keep up at night. I can't sleep. I have questions. I want to, and that's part of growth, and why it's humans are about growth. I think when we thrive, when we are at our best in society, it gives us the best. We are not in danger. We have food. We have our loved ones with us. We are able to be creative and ask deeper, deeper questions. But if we keep those away from people, they don't create, and we take the creative people away, there's no questions, and then it becomes really boring. And we wonder why, young people feel bored or whatever, because we're taking away from them all the things that allow them to ask questions.
Yeah.
And so anyway, you're right. Yeah. And so the scientists, from what I saw in the research, as I was re researching for the book, they say, yeah, this is how we are designed, wired. We're just made for creating. So you take it away, of course we'll feel unhappy.
So may I ask, what was it that got you interested in like finding out the science behind creativity and researching to see all these stuff that make up our ability to create?
Well, there's two different things. My personal experience growing up as a young person was in a very religious situation where they said, you can't trust yourself. You're, you know, because sometimes, you know, your body has reactions to things. And I was very sensitive, you know, and I said, you can't do that. You can't ask these questions. You can't. And so I was always felt somehow I wanted to comply.
Now, were you raised Catholic?
No, not Catholic, but Protestant. Okay. And but very, very conservative, very much you can't. And so, but your body tells you the truth sometimes, right? And so I didn't know that. And so when I started, when I became more mature as a person, I said, wait a minute, they're crazy. And then I wanted to learn more about why is that? Why was that a bad thing? Why was it traumatizing for a young person to not have that ability? And so I just started reading some things and it just kind of hit me. I used to drive, if you're familiar with Uber or Lyft, you know, the rideshare. So I was a driver, which is kind of cool because I like to talk to people all the time. And so this is when I lived in Los Angeles. And so I would talk to these creative people about it. And I got more curious because I had this idea about the creative process, by the way, which was there's really three steps to it or three parts. There's where you dream of an idea. So that's discovery. Then you develop the idea and then you deliver the idea. And then I wanted to see, is this real? Because when I studied voice and I had these really old school teachers, classical, and they would never describe to me why you want to do this exercise. So this is silly. I'm going with my lips or whatever. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Then I found another vocal teacher who used sports medicine to basically deconstruct. Here's a waveform. That's good singing. Here's what the muscles do. They have attached sensors to see what the muscles were doing. And they said, okay, let's deconstruct that and teach you how to be like that. And it made sense to me. So I said, I want to do that with creativity. I want to find out. I don't want to just say, because there's really good stuff. People say, do this, you're more creative. I wanted to see, well, maybe there's some science behind it, like that vocal teacher did and became like a sports science, sports doctor with it. And so that kind of grew my curiosity. It's a real nerdy about it, but I really wanted to eventually put it into, you know, a book of some kind, even just for myself.
Yeah, when you find out like the psychology and the methods behind things, it makes things more, I think maybe for some people, it's easier to grasp. For example, I'm learning Wing Chun at the moment, which is a Chinese martial arts. It's similar to Kung Fu. But in Wing Chun, they use your energy and your opponent's energy against them. So it comes from the ground up, from your hip, it goes up from the hips into your hands. And that's where Bruce Lee was one of the people who practiced Wing Chun. And that's when he did that that 1-inch punch, where it's just that punch. And then it's because of the energy. But like people do not, if in a normal fight, like you're not going to even think about that. The common perspective on it is just like physical. It's just, oh, I'm going to hit him and stuff. But no, it's actually a lot more that goes into that. And once you find out about this, you're like, okay, this is, you can apply this in this way. And this is how this works. And it's much more interesting. And another thing, like martial arts is also a form of arts. I think it was developed by someone long ago who used these techniques and it's being brought through to this day. So I find that really fascinating as well.
Oh yeah. It just, I think the Eastern cultures have such a understanding of being grounded physically and how that works, the energy of the body and those kinds of things are very powerful. But you have to be contemplative in order to center yourself, to see these things.
Right.
And like back to singing, the math of it is if you look at a waveform that's higher pitch, you know, it has smaller waves and then it has larger waves if it's lower pitch. And so when you're singing, you have to put less air to sing the higher notes, which that was a aha moment for me because, you know, everyone thinks you got to put more energy to get the highest notes. So actually you have this extremely small little vocal folds that are making the waveform and they have to have little tiny bursts of air. And so when someone's singing loud in the back and they're leaning back and they have a super high note, it's really yelling, but with like a burst of air. And science of that helped me get better in singing. And so like when we create stuff, it's like it's the same thing. It's like we have phases we go through. Like there's this preparation phase, for instance, where you have to like intake things. You have to breathe in all that's around you before you're even ready to come up with that idea.
Right. Yeah, that's something that I'm going through right now. I finished a script a few months back, a screenplay, and it was like the best screenplay I've ever written and stuff. And I've been pushing that. So all I have to do is basically wait till to hear from the right people and things, whether the pro it's getting progress or not. And I want to get into new creating new work and things, but it's also that time where I feel I need to just relax for a while. And as you mentioned, the prepared, like absorbing stuff and just living and things. And I think that's also an important part in an artist's or creative's journey is to step away for a while and absorb.
Oh, you got it. That's so okay. The academics they give us for internationally, they have this study about, I didn't know this. They have an actual interdisciplinary research being done about creativity. It just blew me away. So these are anthropologists, they're of course artists, visual artists, they're writers, psychologists, and then neurosciences, which is the those are guys are my favorite, or gals, because they have to be so smart to understand the brain. But what you're describing, so there's like four different things. There's preparation, that's like learning your scales if you're a musician. I got to just learn, or whatever it is. I got to live with that kind of music for me to feel it. And then there's what you're describing, they call that incubation.
Sorry if I may.
No, yeah.
I just want to. I'm just curious to ask. In terms of music, are you a vocal artist or a singer? What do you do in that regard?
In order to like feed myself and family, I've done lots of things,
Yeah.
but I mainly trained as a singer, but then I play piano and I compose music,
Okay.
and my daughter and I actually have a group that we write music together with.
Nice.
And so I've done all sorts of different things. My favorite thing is, when I was a singer in the studio doing like backgrounds, like, oh, that kind of stuff's fun.
So
All that,
what
you don't get any.
genres do you normally focus on in music?
I grew up playing jazz music, and
Okay.
then now I actually play. I'm back into my roots. Play religious music, but it's kind of what we call a group that my daughter and I write for. It's called A Beautiful Liturgy. So we
Okay.
try to do is we try to deconstruct it to a point where it's taking something historical, but then making it reimagined. And
I like that.
that's kind of what we do.
Okay, cool. That's interesting. Back to what you were saying before I disrupted you.
No, you didn't disrupt me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically these four things, just to be quick about them, the first one is preparation. Like I'm just learning my craft. This is an example. Or I'm reading material to write something, or listening to music to kind of get grooves and to get the beats going that I want to have. And then there's the incubation phase. Once you kind of have ideas down, then it's kind of simmering. You have to kind of wait. And they call that the incubation. It's kind of like when a cow is chewing the cud, it's kind of has to like chew on it. It's not going to make milk right away, for instance. And then a moment after that happens, this is where people think this is what creativity is. You get, aha, that's it. But to get to that set, people like yourself, who's obviously very creative, that just doesn't happen. You have to give things time. You have to kind of be ready for it. Others have to be ready for it. And they call that the illumination. And then after that, you elaborate, you just put it together. And that's not always easy, because it's the detail that's where it gets, your vision gets stretched or put out. And so what I did is I took all of those four things and I put them into three, because the first things is about getting the idea. I call that the dream. And the second part is developing, which I call the sandbox. You're playing with it and you're waiting, but you're not really, it's not the real thing, but you're working on it. And the third thing is what I call the story, where you're actually writing it out. And I even use a short story as an example of a way we could troubleshoot ideas, which stories we write, but what if stories are actually something, containers for a dream, where we can actually think of a structure to make sense of anything? And all cultures have story, and to be able to tell a story, that's the strength of a culture, to let them, different ways, and Native Americans, they have an amazing way of how they dance the stories out in some of the tribes. It's just really beautiful. So anyway, so you these three things, which I took those four things, the story is really important, because it asks, who am I? Who are you? And where are we? The setting, all the things you as a writer write in a script. You take your idea, like it's, for me, it would be a song, just for instance. And okay, so who's going to sing this? Is it me, someone else, you know? And all those things to tell that song has a story. What's against this song? What's the villain? You know, yeah. Oh, how is the, what's the tension that's involved? Because everything, as humans, we put things in a hero villain situation in order to make sense of it. And not that there always is a hero and villain, but sometimes we're both of us are inside. But anyway, so that's my nerdy stuff about just trying to make sense of what creative people do. And sometimes we get stuck, and sometimes it's good to look back and say, where am I? Am I just at a point where my ideas in that sandbox where I'm developing it still? And I'm free to do that. Some people say, doesn't look like you're working on it, but I am, you know, I'm still working on it. I'm still just testing it out.
Yeah.
And then, or maybe, you know, the idea needs to be rethought of. I need to go backwards and go back to the dreaming and do more dreaming because it's not going to work. For some reason, but all that, you know, creative people sometimes aren't given the credit for those in between spots where it doesn't look like we're working, but we need the space to breathe in sometimes, because if you got a lot of output, you got to have something in to put out.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I have like a need to be like consistently productive at all times, and I found that's not really helpful towards your art at some time, because like you need time to let it breathe, and you might like, for example, you're saying how it's with stories, like you need to sometimes go back, and because you reach a point in your for a script, for example, where this your character is at a certain place, but then you realize this character shouldn't be in the situation and you need to like rework this whole story. And a funny thing, when you were mentioning how we look at stories with a good and bad perspective, that's what makes like lots of films and things relatable, because especially TV shows where there's like characters that you do not relate to, or like who's supposed to be the villain, but the lines are blurred and you maybe relate to that. That's because everything should be, because everyone, the way people look at certain works and certain arts, they're coming from their own perspective as well. So like whatever you're seeing, like a book, for example, when you're reading a book, you like feel sometimes, I know for me, I feel like I already knew this. Like if I'm reading like a self-help book, I already knew this, but like I needed someone to like word it in a specific way for me to like actually register that, oh, I know this. And that's because like I've gone into it with my own like preconceived notions about a certain work.
Oh, that's really the powerful thing about art, is that if someone feels seen in it, like they hear these lyrics of a song and they go through a breakup and they relate to that song, it's their song, but the writer of the song didn't write it for them. Like you don't, but by being a true creative somehow, that this is where the, I think call it magic happens, is like in that honest creation you're making, the story you're telling or whatever it is you're creating, if someone's going to be seen by it in a way you may not expect, which is what you hope for. That's the magic part. That's a part you don't know. Once you give it up, you don't know if that's going to do it or not. But when it does, Picasso would claim, you know, people would say they find meaning in my paintings. He's a French painter. Who did all those funny looking abstract things. And he would say, the people find meaning in it, but that's not what I intended. And there's this whole tension of what is intention versus invention. And invention is taking all that's around you and making something out of it. And intention sometimes is we try to contrive it. Oh, I want people to have this reaction. And that's not as magical. It can work sometimes, but it's not as magical as taking what's true and honest that's around you and being able to tell your stories around that and create your works around that. And that's why, you know, whoever it is that's telling their own story or whatever, or if you're really creative, you're imagining a character and they're telling their story, that could be powerful for a person being seen. Like, I'm seen in your movie. I'm seen in this book. And that's really the hope, because as human beings, you know, we want to be seen and validated for our experiences, and not just marginalized or set aside. And good art brings us together.
Are you familiar with Rick Rubin?
Oh yeah, he's
Yeah.
fantastic.
Yeah, I'm listening to his audiobook at the moment. I've been listening for the past few weeks. And what he's saying is like quite it resonates with what he says as well. And one of the things that I actually was fascinated by was he says greatness begets greatness. And he brought up this time when it was one of the Beach Boys listening to a Beatles album. And they've said, "This is the best music I've ever heard. I want to create something just like that." And then they created the album. I think it's Pet Store, I think.
I wouldn't know exactly. I'm familiar with the Beach Boys,
Yeah.
but I'm not that old. I'm not
Oh,
that
I want to get it
old
right.
yet.
I think it was Pet Toys or something. But John Lennon later listened to that album and he's like, "That is something that I'd want to make myself." And they ended up making that Sgt. Pepper's album based on the music they heard from the Beach Boys. And the Beach Boys was inspired by the Beatles. So they basically inspired each other to create better pieces of work for themselves.
Oh, that's a beautiful way of putting it. And of course, and Ruben's a genius in explaining this. And the scientists really would agree with this too, because we have to have inspiration is something you need to work for, in other words. So you have to, so if you're an artist like the Beach Boys, you listened, I want to get better. What do? Is you get a playlist. Of course, now it's easy because you can just download it. But back then you had to go to a store and buy the vinyl record and listen to it, and it had scratches on it. You hopefully you wouldn't put it in the sun and melt it like I used to, and it would be so sad.
Oh,
But
shit.
anyway, yeah, I was like, no, don't do that.
Yeah,
But
when I
that's
was a
cool.
kid, I put all my brother's CDs inside the heater and it all melted, and he like borrowed these CDs from friends and shit.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that was like not a good moment. Did you survive? You survived that. Your brother wasn't too, he
I
forgave
was
you.
like 2 years old, so. Yeah.
That's, so you have to work at it. It costs something to get that inspiration, but that doesn't look like work. So basically what I was trying to describe is the kind of work that artists aren't given credit for is when somebody like a musician, like the Beach Boys would say, I want to get better. And I'm going to listen to this as many times as I can to learn from the Beatles. So you're listening and you're thinking, someone's looking at you thinking, well, that's not work. But then, it is, because you need to breathe in something. And what's around you, there's gold mines around you, but you have to uncover them, and you have to believe that they're there, and you have to believe that there's some art inspiration for you, that you don't have to somehow not be you. You just have to kind of dig what's there. And iterations, this is the thing kind of blew me away, are really creative genius, meaning it's not like we're going to create a new tonal scale where there's new scales. We can do that, but we're going to like take what's there and like do a little bit different, like, and be ourselves in whatever it is that we're doing. So being completely original, I think, is kind of a mistake.
Yeah, because you can't really be original because everything has been inspired by everything before you.
Yeah, and
It's
that's what
like,
makes it good too, right? That's what makes Sgt. Pepper's better. That's a beautiful
It
description
was
Ruben
Pet
gives us.
Sounds. I
But
Googled it. It was Pet
Pet Sounds.
Sounds. Yeah.
Pet Sounds. Okay, that sounds right.
Yeah.
That's cool though. I like that.
Yeah. And music is really fascinating because, like, when you create music, I've made music as a rapper before. I've just made one. A song a few weeks ago in a studio. But like when you're creating music, like you don't know all the time if the song is going to be a hit or not. Like certain songs that you don't think is going to like resonates, and the stuff that you do want to think that's going to connect with people doesn't. And like it's so rare to find like a song because like there's so many good artists out there and they have like good songs, but it's not like found by the right people. Like I was watching this Vice video about the song by Shaggy, "It Wasn't Me."
I might.
Yeah. So that song is about a guy cheating on his girlfriend, and she finds out, and he's like, "It wasn't me." So, but that like and that song at the time they made it like in 2001 or something, and they Like Shaggy was gonna like he's like almost off the label. They didn't want to fund him and shit. And they thought the song wasn't gonna connect, or like it was too controversial for the times. And they ended up, so they were gonna scrap it. And then I think one of their managers was just listening to the album. They went out to get groceries or something, and it was playing in the background, and he heard that song. He's like, "Oh, you guys need to finish this." And so they took that. They're like, "Okay, we're gonna finish it." And then it was out. It was on the album. It was out. Like no one really listened. And then this guy in Hawaii, a DJ, downloaded it illegally and played it on his radio station. As people were calling in, they're like, "What song is this?" And he's like, "Shaggy, it wasn't me." So it was all like, and they said it was a bunch of happy mistakes that led up to the success of that song.
That's great. I love that. And he was just creating and hoping he wouldn't have to wait that long. That's a kind of a good lesson to think about, those happy accidents. But they don't happen if he didn't write it first in the first place.
Wubba-lubba-dub-dub. Okay. No, I'm not just drinking and saying wubba-lubba-dub like an asshole because I'm an alcoholic. No, there's a reason for me doing this. You have reached a milestone, and that milestone is making it halfway through the episode. And for that, you deserve a gift. Yes, that's right, a gift. Well, I have a new song coming out called Wubba-Lubba-Dubbin. And not many people have heard it, but today you get to listen to a demo version of the track. It's not how the final song's gonna sound, but this is basically how it's gonna sound. Enjoy.
Still in it, still in it, gonna win it, gonna win it. Used to wing it, used to wing it. Now I'm serious, now I'm serious. Grinding from 9 to 5, every day and every night. Saving grace, I just might. Scraping these rhymes, just follow the signs. Only date 9, speeding with no fines. Piling at the bar, a bunch of white lines. Say you miss me, then you ghost me. You a phony, phones tap, this is rap, so show me. Make up words in my mind and call it poetry. I think I just became a hot commodity. Hey, don't forget, this is Josie, so don't get too cozy. Slashed up, got us clubbing, thugging, wubba lubba dubbing, and humping. Keep it pumping while we clubbing, thugging, wubba lubba dubbing, and humping. Hold this, I need to stay focused. Nah, I cannot smoke this. Keep it kayfabe, Hulk Hogan. They playing with their wokeness. End of days, the plague flying locust. Conspiracy, that is bogus. Damn misery, I gotta stay focused. Wanna be the one who puts a risen respect
and expects not to get a devil in a new dress.
Would be best if I said less. I gotta confess, that's never been done by the feds. Put this combo to bed, I still haven't said nothing yet.
Put the money on the table, let's bet. Funny how credit creates debt. Only the paranoid stay ahead. The rest end up dead, all in debt.
Slash style, got us clubbing, thugging, wubba lubba dubbing. Dubbing and humping. Slashed up, got us clubbing, bugging, wubba lubba dubbing.
Still in it, still humping. Gonna win it, gonna win it.
Keep it pumping while we clubbing, bugging, wubba lubba dubbing and humping.
Still in it, still in it. Gonna win it, gonna win it. Used to wing it, used to wing it.
So, Rich, a few years ago, I had quite a big composer on my podcast, and I asked him the question if he ever gets writer's block. And his response to me was, "I'm a professional, and only amateurs get writer's block." And after reading The War of Art, I kind of understand what he means, because in that book, they say that the difference between a professional and an amateur is that a professional gets a job done at all times, no matter the cost, and that's the thing that separates the two. But as a natural person, I'm sure like you've encountered times when you had a creative block. So what would you do to deal with that, and how have you overcome that in the past?
Sometimes a creative block does come from creating too much. So basically, the way to prevent it, in the past, has been to take a rest. One of my friends, was super creative. He would take 2 months out of the year. He's like so busy, wall to wall, owns a studio, all that, and then he would just disappear.
Is it
So
at
also all
random
the
times during the year, or is it
no,
a specific
he's got
period? Okay.
specific period, so he knows it's coming. So I think there's this idea of hustle that gets in the way. It's not that the amateur doesn't work hard, and a lot of these Pressfield would say in War of Art
Yeah.
that you have this enemy, and part of that enemy is not resting, not taking a break, or walking away from something, or knowing when to say it's time to give up. You know, the professional is going to have to put a lot out. And so what the disconnect though that you're talking about, is more about how a person can sustain and be healthy. Because if we think that creativity comes, like we talked at the beginning, out of simply just the difficult things and the trauma, then that's going to be exhausting. It's not going to be healing. But if we can learn as a person to thrive and have good habits and good relationships, things that sustain us just as being a human being, that's what I think is the writer's block. I think that's what gets in the way. When they say at all cost, that's another thing I like to say, is my art more important than the people around me? And so sometimes some of us make a decision to say, I'm not going to take this gig because it's even if I get paid well, or whatever, because it may hurt relationships or my values. So sometimes, I have friends who have lost gigs because of their view on COVID. Because one friend of mine had a spouse that was very sensitive to any kind of virus, and he was concerned. So they fired him. So there is a writer's block is internal, but there's also the fear of it external. And so at all costs is something I push back against, because not at the cost of being a human being, not at the cost of the things I believe. And I think, yes, sometimes, we put on a pedestal the person who's the maestro or the diva, when really the person who is going to be working is the one who you're going to call all the time, and they're going to serve you, they're going to do well. So us as artists, this is the thing I think it's upside down. Those of you like yourself, I know, who do things all the time, you do it because you're serving some other person. You're giving them something. You're giving them an experience. You're giving them your work. You're giving them whatever it is. It's not that you're taking from them so you can be more famous. And the person who can sustain it is like that. Even if they seem like a jerk, they're really giving something to people. And I think that's where the writer's block comes from, is when somehow that we have an upside down view of that, and we think that it's only hustle. We think that it's only about pragmatism, or like Machiavelli, it's only
Yeah.
getting in and win only winning. But winning is me, like they're saying, like the people you're quoting, is to continue to do it. That's winning.
Right.
I get to come the next day and I get to, do it again. I get to play music again. I get to write again, or whatever it is. That's winning. And so when you take your mind, the block comes from when I'm thinking of winning being something different than that. Like, for instance, I have a friend, best-selling author, who helped me a lot. He's explaining he got everything he wanted. He won, but he lost because it didn't give him what his expectation was. And
Right.
his life kind of unraveled a little bit, because he's thinking, yeah, I have these accolades now. I've written whatever books got me on this bestseller list and all this. But now that I'm on this side of it, did I really win? So yeah, there's this.
I feel like you cannot go into something with the intention of the end goal will benefit me. I'll be better or I'll be enough because I've done this. Because once you get there and you realize that's not the case, then it's like, oh shit, now what? But like, if you like take every day one step at a time and you're like, okay, I'm going to exercise. I'm going to get all my stuff right first. I'm going to just go about this on a daily mission and see what happens, what comes from that. There's going to be bad moments. There's going to be good moments, but I use the bad moments to help me and use that in a positive way. Because I feel like whatever you do, there's always going to be losses. Like, you lose more than you win. There's always these setbacks, but it's how you like react from them or how you bounce back from them. That's what's going to help you long term. That's just my views on it.
I think that's very wise. You're a wise young man, because that's a lot of people think, you know, if I could just get this, then I'll have arrived. And the people that I personally know who have arrived said, no, I'd like to arrive now. And you and I would, whatever it is, platinum record, whatever it is, or best-selling lists or whatever that is, the movie that you want to make. But here's where I think all of this comes together in this phrase. Creativity is a process, not a product. It's a process, not a product. Meaning, if I just judge it, then I'm looking at a tombstone saying that's that person's life. No, him living every day is that person's life. And so creativity is life. And so I have to live it. And that's why I think that the composer is going to say there is no writer's block, because he understands like what you're saying. Like, you seem to understand well, you have to keep the process going. And that's just living life. It's thriving with whatever you got in front of you. It's learning how to thrive. And some of us get more than others get. And, you know, we can let that be our block and say, well, she's got more, he's got more than me. But you know what? So what? I got what I got. Am I going to do something with it?
Yeah. Like, for me, like, a few years ago, I would be like, I want to change the world with my art. Like, that's what I want to do. And now I realize, like, shit, there ain't that much stuff that's special that I can do to change the world. But now I'm just focused on like creating the best work that I can, instead of like creating, okay, no, I'm going to do this so it could change people's views on this, or like maybe it's going to bring something that no one's have thought about before and like change the world. But like, I realize, no, you can't do that.
But, and the truth is, it's possible, but just like the song about the guy cheating, right?
Yeah.
If he didn't make the song, it wouldn't have become famous. And so if you didn't get up in the morning, I didn't get up in the morning and create something, then, you know, I'm never going to get to whatever this other thing is. But if I can at least get up in the morning and make something great that I'm proud of and work on myself and grow, that's why a new phrase for me is keep growing and keep creating. And those two go together. So, and if I can do that, then I'm living life. I'm breathing. I'm actually alive. You know, I'm not like a corpse. And I think sometimes, you know, we look for some end point. No, we want to just keep creating and keep growing as people. And if we do that, you and I, the more of us do it, and like you said, inspiring each other, you know, more that greatness, that's what will change the world, is if we have more Nicks out there who are going to say, I'm going to make something. I want to change the world, but here's how I'm going to change it. I got to get up in the morning. And I got to make something great.
Right. Like a bad draft of something is better than no draft of something, because you can edit it later.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. For a writer, I love that.
Yeah. You sound like someone who's like constantly working on stuff and things. What do you do when you do not work? Like, when you're not creating and stuff? Because you seem someone who's like keeps himself busy with creating and stuff. And going back to that writer's block, has there ever been like a time when you like weren't like maybe being paid for something, but you were creating something and it was just like you needed motivation to do it? Was there ever that instance? And like, also, so it's a two-part question basically. It's you can answer the one, whichever one you want to answer first, you can go. But it's basically the two questions are, what do you do when you're not creating, and has there ever been an instance where you needed motivation to create?
So I think there's been a lot of times where I had a hard time getting out of bed, or I was depressed. And I think sometimes I think there's big cycles and smaller cycles. There's macro and micro. And sometimes we have to have periods where, you know, we're incubating, we're like the butterfly and the chrysalis. Maybe it's just, we're not ready yet inside to create something. And so sometimes we can look at that as you're grieving. Like I was grieving. I remember a few years ago when I lost my mother, that took me years to just get over that. And so sometimes those things become, they stop us. Life is, we get distractions. We get things that happen, in life, setbacks and things like that. And I've gone through many of those things. How am I going to keep creating in that? So one of the hardest things that keeps me back is not learning to give a wake or a funeral to whatever it is I had to walk away from, or whatever walked away from me. And so when my mindset is, okay, that's over, now I can keep going forward. But if I'm not over it yet, that's where a person like me has to, the struggles. That's where Stephen Pressfield's book is good. I have to kind of go through there and keep at it. Because you're not going to feel it all the time. You're not going to feel the inspiration all the time.
Yeah.
And when you tell yourself, yes, you're allowed to be dark right now. You're allowed to be sad right now. You're allowed to maybe do a little bit less right now. But it doesn't mean you can't do anything.
Do you explore these feelings in your work?
I don't know if I do or not. Okay. To be honest, I look at it as I'm writing, you know, the one thing I'll keep doing as a writer is I'll keep journaling. And so sometimes that's the only thing that I can do, or writing songs or poetry or things like that. Very internal and personal. But I prefer collaboration. That's when I feel like I'm at my best. So if I'm able to, in a disciplined way, say, let me collaborate with somebody this month or whatever, that's going to keep me going as well, because then I have to shower, get clean, and go be with that person and be, you know, ready to bring something to the table. So
do you that you collaborate with often, like someone that you, or a group of people that you always go back to collaborate with?
Well, I have like some people where they test my work, for instance, like here, they'll read it and back. Yes. Okay. But musically speaking, like my daughter and I mentioned earlier, we are a group. And so in our group, we collaborate, and when we have some writing sessions, that's
so where. Do you guys write music together, or do you guys record music?
Yeah, all that we've recorded. We have a, 8 years
ago. She also sings and writes.
Yeah. She's like the front man. I'm the side man. But we collaborate on the music and the writing and perform it together at times. And the pandemic set us back a lot. I was like, you're shut down. So that was terrible for a lot of people who go out and perform or do things with people, even if they're small venues, like we did very small venues, even people's living rooms and things like that.
Do you people like hire you just to let's say they have like a party or a wedding or something, and they hire you?
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're original music. What we write for is to reimagine kind of where our faith center, our churches, and how we can express that. So it's really unique. It's very small market, if you would, because there's people who do these big mega churches that you may have heard of or seen, where they have like Hillsong, you know, they have like, and I worked in production before at a place like that, where we had like 40-foot video wall that was behind the band, and it's really cool. But it's not, so we're like kind of like at the other side of that. But the collaboration part is really important, because you bring different things to the table. When I was writing my book, Mind Blown, the, development editor, I know her, she did my first book with me. She was just fantastic writer, far better writer than I am, which is great. And so the collaboration there was with her read notes, which were very painful because she's sarcastic, which was wonderful.
Okay.
But it was like more painful than school, but also fun. You know, I'm like sometimes if we don't feel the pain, we're not alive, right, Nick? I mean, and sometimes when we have people that we collaborate with that actually tell us the truth, that's golden. And that's enough to get us out of a rut, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, like people who you collaborate who also like test you or like who calls you out if like you're not up to par with something. Like, for example, in the studio, like, there was a time where I wasn't getting these verses, like, I wasn't landing the notes right. And instead of like being someone who's just like, okay, no, we need a wrap up studio time, we need to get out of here and stuff, he's like, no, dude, like, he was like, say, like, just give it time to land on it. And it took about like 10 minutes and we did it and then we could carry on with the session. So I like people who can like call you out on that. Cause like a lot of people, especially like, I know like big artists and stuff, like maybe like people would be like scared to like call them out on like certain, like, nah, this verse is whack. Like no one's going to say that to them. And then they end up with like something that's just like corny or something.
So working with music producers or other musicians in the studio, it's honest by itself. Like, Rich, take a listen to your last performance, that track. And sometimes that'll do it. And they look at you like, Rich, okay, is that what you really wanted? And like, we'll do it again. So my friend Sam, who he's a terrific producer, we also were hard on him because we're like, because he also mixed us.
Yeah.
And my daughter, she's brutal, a creative director. She was just like, here's my long list of notes of things I don't like and on my voice. She didn't want, just, that's too much auto-tune on that note. There's too much, it was so detailed. But it was really good. But when you're creating, and that's a level of honesty, even that's behind the scenes, behind the song you wrote, it's like, that's what makes good stuff. It's the friends, the person, even if you're hiring, like the editor, friend of mine, who, she was great. And I think I bet the people who are at the top, they stay at the top because they hire people who tell them the truth, or they have friends that are around them. I would imagine that if I could just ask, you know, Beyonce or somebody. But how many songwriting credits are on that album that she did not too long ago? I think there's like one song had 50 people.
Shit.
I mean, it's like, so it's like, I want to hear from 50 different people how we can make the song better. Yeah. I mean, it's hard for some of us to take that feedback. And if a person's wondering how they want to grow as a creative, be like Nick, you know, have somebody you're willing to tell you the truth when it's not up to your par. And, but that's kind of one of the ways, like the question you had to get past that is to really allow yourself to have that outside person who can just take you out and say, Rich, you're better than this. Or Rich, why haven't you written anything, you know, this month, et cetera.
So, Rich, what are you working on at the moment? Is there anything new that you're working on?
Anything brand new? Well,
or anything
I feel like
that
book,
been working on for a while or something.
Well, this whole thing about Mind Blown is its first iteration, of course, is the book I put out. Now I'm working on trying to put it into some more talks and also working out on a possible follow-up book. What is that going to look like? So I have two characters. I have a robot and a wizard. And okay. So I'm thinking about taking those characters and doing, I don't know if it's a kind of a limited series online with it. So like a podcast with these characters.
Okay.
So I would, so,
like
so,
a
so basically, so
with
if you're
special effects and all of those stuff,
like I wish
voice effects
now that's,
and all of those things.
Maybe not. Let me put it this way. The robot and wizard are really just these two cartoon guys that represent the two sides of creativity. Because the robot's like the scientist and the wizard's kind of like the artist, the painter. And and so the idea is I would have collaborators who are robots and who are wizards, like these engineers and scientists talking to these artists, painters and poets, and to kind of see how those come together, how it works. Because that's the whole thing about bridging this idea, bridging science and magic, is idea of mystical meets rational. Abstract meets concrete. And so that's the thing that started my whole journey with the Mind Blown, understanding, you know, we have divergent thinkers and convergent thinkers. You know, most creative people, we can't turn it off. The ideas keep coming. And so we get, we have to create. But a lot of people don't know how to do that yet. They're the robot. So that's the idea. So that's the thing I'm kind of working on is, this thing I'm kind of working on is just getting that as an iteration, the next iteration of what I wrote in this book.
Yeah, can you just speak a bit more about that, about magic and it's what it has to do with creativity, and like how do you get to that, to that view of looking at it like that?
The magic part is really this imagination. That's where the word is coming from. We have to be able to see something that's not there in order to put it into something. So you as a writer, you have to imagine characters. And the magic is when those work and they're not real, meaning, but they're on the paper. And eventually an actor may have a scene with that, and and someone's moved by that scene, and they bring their friends to a movie or they watch it on a screen. The magic is how all those steps from back there go to when something concrete happens. And that's a lot of times someone will hear a song, say, oh, that's magic. But if you're able to deconstruct it, I think that's where sometimes you can learn how to improve your creativity. And so that's kind of why I look at it that way.
Interesting. I have like a theory, like, so this podcast is called Into the Muse. And I know like the history of muses and the Greek mythology and stuff. I have it's similar to what you're saying in some kind of way, I think, because I believe like the muses like exist in a different dimension, but it's there. It's all thoughts, it's all ideas and everything. And it's all there. And certain people are able to tap into that very well. And that's when you'll be able to, certain people are able to tap into it and explore it. Other people are able to tap into it and like create with it, use it as a fuel. And like we are a vessel. We are all like vessels of this muse, of this bigger thing. Cause there's like being ideas that you think about. And I'm pretty sure like someone on a different continent 500 years ago thought about that thing as well, but they were not in the same place as you, and the stuff around them wasn't the same as yours, but somehow they're able to think of something like that. That's how you also see like many religions and many cultures have similarities, but they're like on different spectrums of the world. And I feel like that's the muse that's helped them, that's like they were able to tap into it at different places at different times.
Yeah, I think I love the mystical side of looking at it that way. And this is kind of where I bounce to the science side of it too. Because when they study the brain, they understand there's people who are open-minded more. They call them divergent thinkers. They're like, that's why I call that guy the wizard, because he's like the muse. And then the robots, they're kind of more the process, you know, they everything has to fit in. It's very technical. So what you're saying, how scientists would approach it in their minds, and they would take our brain and study, oh, there's these people who are open to ideas more, and they call it cognitive disinhibition, just to those folks who have it. 20% of the population are what they call this divergent thinker, or what I call the wizard, and the other part of the population isn't. So like you were saying, there's a certain part of the population that's kind of more open to these things that just seem, you know, they have a kind of an insight. And, you know, so it's both true to say there's this muse, one way to describe it, but the scientists say, yeah, that's these people who have this openness to their mind. So however it plays itself out, whether it's a metaphysical thing strictly or it's chemicals, it's true. What you're saying is true. There is this thing. And, you know, I look at science just as a way that it's a language that describes something that you can repeat and make it concrete, but it doesn't see everything though. It's only seeing what it sees. And so, but I think it's important, like I mentioned earlier with singing, how when I understood the science part of it, it also helped me enjoy singing. Like, by the way, I went to music school and I hated singing because they just made me feel terrible. I said, you have to sing it this way because this person's dead and more important than you, this composer. And I said, well, I don't like that. I want to sing for people, you know? But when I had a vocal coach who taught me some of the things I was mentioning, it allowed me to enjoy using my voice and having more of that kind of mystical connection with folks. And so what you're teaching and trying to help people tap into is true. Is there something greater out there that if you have an open mind, can show you things, can help you. And it's not about being completely original, like creating something that's never been seen before, but you've never been seen before in this point in time of history. So if you just create, it's going to do some things that will come up, like the word magic.
What's your views on AI and its relation to creativity?
Well, I don't know. I think AI as a tool is great, because as a writer, it gives me like four options to change a sentence when I'm like writing now. So I use some of it, you know, why not? Because I would have, you know, but I still make the decision. So it, you know, that's where I think that the visual arts I'm more afraid of, because what it's going to do is we're going to expect to see certain things look a certain way and it won't be real. And you know, just like, I don't think it's good to auto-tune everything. That's kind of an AI. It's saying, but at the same time, it's kind of how we do things now. And so if I were to take it away, for instance, from a recording I did, it may sound wrong, even though it's fine, because that's a cultural thing. So my fear is that the AI kind of changes the way that we interface with the natural world, where we're not open. We're not as open-minded anymore. We become more narrow, because it's trying to find out what hits our dopamine right away, you know? And sometimes we need to do what I call embrace the awkward. We need to be willing to do that. AI is the opposite. It wants to find out how to push your buttons.
As quick as possible.
As quick as possible. So the idea of like the martial arts you're learning, the things that make us able to tap into just the forces of nature that are all around us, which scientists say they're there too. All this stuff we're talking about, I'm afraid that AI is going to make us more unaware of all just the stuff around us. So that's my fear of it. I'm not really afraid of it. You know, maybe it will become Skynet, because now in the international conflicts we have going on right now, they have some AI things going on where they have bombs on them. And so, not to get dark, but you know, but as an artist though, you know, my daughter's also, she's a visual artist. She, you know, they take an artist's way of thinking and they try to automate it. And that's, I don't know. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I think the nuance of it is it's a tool. So, you know, we already use tools that are amazing. Like the computer, we can talk around the world. This was impossible before. You had telegraph. You know? But, you know, that's great. It's beautiful. But at the same time, we have to realize that people are more important. That's why process is more important than product. Like we talked about that a moment ago. That's why how we live is important. That's why thriving is important. And if AI is there to distract us from seeing that our lives can improve in other ways, or it's there to keep people oppressed because it's going to distract them, they're going to be all in those headset things, you know?
Yeah, those VR headsets.
And not see that, you know, the world, the goal is to take away our imagination, Nick.
And I think that's what they're trying.
To keep us from being the muse. The muse is there to kind of remind, a tap on the shoulder, say, look at what's there. It's like the prophets in the Bible were like muses. They were like, here's what we see. And if this is going to happen. And, you know, like, King David in the Bible story, you know, he took someone's wife, right? And killed her husband, who was a general. And
after he had an affair with her.
Yeah. And so poor Bathsheba, right? It was a beautiful woman who was taken advantage by a king. Goes to this, it was his prophet who sat down and said, let me tell you a story, king, about this guy who takes someone's lamb. And that's how he exposed the truth through a story to this king, who then, you know, fell apart saying, wow, you know, told him the truth. So I think we need more muses. We need more prophets. We need more people who ask questions. And creativity is for all of us. So we keep doing that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if you've seen with AI, there's now like they're using AI to like create music and stuff. Like they have like Drake songs, which Drake never performed, but it sounds like him. They've taken his voice and making songs. And I'm just like thinking, because there's that, which is really good. I try to not listen to it because I want to listen to a real Drake, because I feel like what makes art relatable is that it comes from a human element, like a human has gone through the process, as you said, to create that. But with AI, it's just there. They just generates it in a few seconds. And it's only gonna get better and better because, like, you see, they're writing comedy and shit now, and like the comedy's not funny, but like in 5 years' time, it's gonna
Yeah.
be, yeah. And I've been seeing there's like a scam like going around in South Africa on like YouTube and stuff where Elon Musk is saying you must invest in something and you'll get like a certain money back, but it's like an AI Elon Musk, and it has,
Oh no.
yeah, and like it could, like a lot of people are gonna fall for that.
I and the only reason they're getting better, only reason they could copy Drake is because Drake already made music.
Yeah.
So even though the AI has this potential, it's only going to be as good as what people give it. And so it's also going to be bad too, because, you know, a lot of the laws I think out there are trying to say, me as an individual never want, don't use my life as your computer material. Or if you're going to do it, then you have to pay me, which is
Yeah.
fair. So if Drake, if they make a Drake song, then he gets royalties, right? So
I don't know if
I think,
they is getting royalties for this
I don't
AI
know.
stuff.
I'm just saying they would have to do that with some of the laws. They're talking about this in at least in the United States about that, because intellectual property, who owns that then? So now you don't really own, if you have something created in AI, at least here in my country, they don't, you can't own that really, the art. That's not
Okay.
something you can really sell. You can get away with that perhaps, but there's still, it's like a gray area still.
Okay.
So it hasn't caught up to that. But yeah, what you're saying, the scamming, we're good at scamming, aren't
It's a
we?
talent.
As
That's an
human
art.
beings.
That's an art form itself, I guess. That's why they say it's a scam artist.
It's really the, you know, magic is about deception too. It's a distraction. It's about those things. We talk about that word. It also has that dark connotation too, is and that's one reason I wanted to bring science to it, because I wanted to expose kind of like the old story, Wizard of Oz, where the wizard, the curtain gets pulled and you see it's a guy back there running it. And I think that's, if you and I and others keep asking questions, at least hopefully people will see behind the curtain about AI, that it's, this is what it is. I mean, even if it looks cool and does whatever it does, it's really just taking people's work and spinning it out.
Yeah. It's interesting where it's going, 'cause we can talk more about AI and things because it's out there. But before we end this podcast, I just want to ask you a question. How does being a creative make me or anyone listening a better version of themselves?
The first part of that is, since we're all designed to create, that's our genetic code. When we were to, if we follow our genetic code, we follow kind of what as a creature we're meant to do. It's kind of like, and in the animal kingdom, if you know, we talk about lion, right? The lion's there to hunt. The lion, for the lion to hunt is to be a lion. For a human to create is to be a human. And so if we learn to unlock that part of ourselves that's creative, whether it's a hobby or whether it's a profession, then we're discovering kind of who we are as people, as individuals. So I like to say, I create, therefore I am. You know, it shows me that I'm alive. It shows me those things. And so that's the idea. If I can actually be more human, then I'm actually being more creative, thriving. So we talked about that earlier. So that's what it looks like. If I can thrive emotionally, take the pains and traumas, but turn them into something that has meaning, a story, whatever it is, then that's healthy. That's taking and upset, upscaling, as we call it, the world, and myself. And so, whatever material I'm given and what I make out of it, is showing how healthy I am. And so if I'm able to make something, that's a good thing for myself. So I'm a better version of myself when I do that, as opposed to the guy I told you who didn't get out of bed. I just stayed in bed. And so that's a choice. It's either the rich Kirkpatrick who stays in bed and doesn't write anymore and do anything, or the one who gets up and says, what can I make today for myself and other people?
It's like the multiverse in a way. There's a version of you where you just stay in bed and do nothing, and there's a version of you where you're out there creating and making the best work and being the best version of yourself.
That's it, Nick. That's on the multiverse, and I'd rather be in the other one, but the other one takes work. And I think, and that's the thing, is if you think, and I know you don't, but if anyone listening thinks that this is just, you know, easy to do, it's not. It's not easy. Just like it's not easy for the lioness to hunt.
There's that saying, I'll paraphrase it. There's a struggle of going out there and making your dream come true. And there's a struggle of living life and thinking of what could have been if I did that. So it's always up to you.
I agree.
Anyway, Rich, it was great having you on the podcast. Thanks for coming on. Would you like to leave with any specific words?
Keep growing and keep creating.